I'm a mother to four kiddos, one of whom has special needs. I've been in a long season of trying to sit regularly, and I'm lucky if I can get 10 to 15 minutes a day. I'm wondering if there are practices that come to mind that one can do when one's frequently around little ones, some who have high demands, needs. I try to practice mindfulness, but I feel the loss of a longer regular sit. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I can appreciate that, but the reality is the needs of the children take precedence, and that one has to allow the practice or the training, because oftentimes when we think of practice, okay, I've got to be sitting, and that's, you know, it's a fairly prescribed spectrum of what we call practice, and so that learning how to say, rather than conceiving of practice as this, which I have to get back to in order to have practiced, it's sort of reconfiguring one's conception of practice, and recognizing, I mean, one is precepts, refuges. Again, refuges and precepts. These are really do we consciously return to a refuge? Do we acknowledge and have a appreciation of the kind of restraint and integrity that, because oftentimes we'll just overlook it. Because, you know, I think for the most part, especially in the West, people are really sincere, and the practice of precepts is fairly natural, and so that just taking a bit of refinement to it and making it conscious. Oh, I'm living with these precepts. I'm living with an integrity of conduct, and then to be able to delight in it. I mean, that's actually the, like, with meditation techniques or practices, the, like, formal sitting, paying attention to the breath coming in and coming out, mindfulness of breathing. In the, say, the classical commentary on the path, Visuddhimagga, path of purification, it's a commentarial text that was done probably about a thousand years after the Buddha it was compiled. But in Theravada world, it's really highly regarded. There's a pulling together, a compiling of all the different meditations that the Buddha recommended, encouraged in the discourses, and there's 40 of them altogether. So that broadens the spectrum of what is possible. And some of them are, there's 10 of them that are recollections or discursive meditations. And the sila anusati is to recollect to, and it's a conscious recollection, and to be able to direct one's attention to the recollection of the precepts, having kept the precepts, a recollection of the integrity that one's been living by. And that's a great source of clarity and peace. Chahatonasati, recollection of the generosity. Just because sometimes we do things and we don't make it conscious, so it's as if we didn't do it. And it's really important to make it conscious, not to sort of puff oneself up in some way, but to solidify the goodness that we have done. It's really, really important, because think of the in the Sri Lankan tradition, and in their culture, one of the things that I have heard, I'm not that familiar with Sri Lanka culture, but one of the things I've heard that they do within the culture is that they will, either somebody will gift them a book or they have a book themselves, and it's like a journal, and then they'll write down things that they have done that were really meritorious, good, wholesome, skillful, things that they found really delightful in terms of, especially in terms of, you know, what is, say, from the Buddhist terminology, what is punya, the wholesome qualities that lead to happiness and well-being. And they'll make a journal, and they themselves might go back and read it from time to time. Maybe there'll be, these are times of difficulty or feeling bereft in some way, then to go back and to recollect that. And then also it's what they do at the end of someone's life, on their deathbed, some other relative or friend will read that back to them, so that as they're approaching death, there's this brightness of recollection. And you know, it's just really important to see the power in that punya, that skillfulness, and living a really good life in its true sense, and you know, and caring for the needs of little kids, that takes precedence over your desire to sit meditate. Sometimes, I mean, if you have the opportunity. And it depends on the family situation. Then you have time when you can make time, but to also turn direct attention to, you know, other ways that one can be brightening the mind, and certainly like just mindfulness of the body in terms of. Not in a formal sense of, okay, 32 parts of the body going through it as a formal meditation, but that sense of contact, of touch, of a clear comprehension of circumstance, of time and place. There's a clarity that starts to build when one gets more connected with the body. And one can be consciously, as you start to pay attention to your body, you start recognizing the different ways and different areas of the body that either get agitated or get tightened up or you can be consciously relaxing or settling or soothing or settling in just through the experience of the body. And just because sometimes we, you know, just like our facial muscles sort of tighten up so much, our shoulders, pit of the stomach. What does it feel when we're uncertain? Okay, how do we relax? We're hesitant about something, and we're You can feel that tentativeness in how we're doing something or just accomplishing a task. And so bringing mindfulness and bringing a sense of change to that. So there's a clarity that begins to establish itself in a very wholesome way, a skillful way, so that maybe as an example. There's a few people here who've been to a Bhaiagiri and know Debbie. And Debbie's was, I mean, she was one of the founders of the Sangapala Foundation and the Bhaiagiri Monastery, and has lived at the monastery since almost its beginning. And anyway, her her father, I mean, now he's 95, 96, and Debbie's mom passed, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago, something like that. And then the two of them worked together well as a pair. She had a really sharp mind and was totally there, but her body was falling apart. He's very healthy physically, but short-term memory loss, and just not so there. He's very happy, which is a basic. I mean, he's lived a really good life, but he needs attention. You have to keep an eye on him all the time. And so Debbie and her siblings have been sharing out duties. But when the pandemic came, then it was way more difficult to do. So Debbie ended up being the primary caregiver. And so that kind of responsibility and duty is 24/7, and not a whole lot of time for sitting meditation. And even when it's quiet and he's sleeping, you still can't. You got to be alert. You got to be present. So she is. For a while, she was lamenting the loss of time for sitting. But recently, she's been, and I've been encouraging her in different ways. And of course, she's a savvy, solid practitioner anyway. But she was saying just how grateful, how her practice has changed and how it's deepened, even without the ability to have a steady sitting practice. So, and I think it's when, again, that shifting attention and putting attention, giving importance to what needs to be important. And of course, it's just that mindfulness, clear comprehension, reflective insight into the nature of our experience. You do it with kindness, you do it with presence, you do it with grace, and good things happen.